Nintendo had called the Wii U the GameCube 2, people would have lost their sh**.
I don't know. Would have calling it the Wii 2 have been...
I think the Wii 2 would have been a better name, too, because then it would have been very clear this is a new system and not just some crazy controller for an existing piece of hardware.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
The branding is really bad.
Do you think that's why EA said they're not making any games for it? Because they didn't realize that it's a new console?
Oh man, Bink, I am so glad that we finally were able to do two shows week after week. Finally, I just have been worried to death that if we ever got this far, something might blow up and happen unexpectedly. So yeah, welcome back, I guess.
Thanks, Sean. It's great to be here.
Oh man, Bink, you sound way different.
Well, that's because I'm in the United States. You don't have the overseas lag.
Is that what, actually, you sound a lot like Zach Shipley, host of the No Topic Required podcast.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know.
This intro is stupid.
So, Zach, yeah, welcome to the Famicom Dojo podcast. You were here MacFest 2012, I believe, in a big roundtable. Yeah.
It's kind of nice to be on the proper show instead of just being... in a hotel room. I felt like I was making some kind of racy film.
Well, you did show Jew Wario your hairy man stuff.
I clearly do not remember this as well as you do. So.
good times.
Elevation Burger.
Oh yes, you know, I did a video about Elevation Burger actually. Went back there by myself last year, and then just released myself eating a five fatty burger. You know, it's funny that you go to edit something like that and you realize that you don't want to have anyone watch you eat. It's just disgusting.
I'm going to tell a great story about me eating on my show this week, so if anybody wants to tune into that.
Right on. Oh, yeah, you actually held back talk about the Xbox One so that you could talk about it here, which I greatly appreciate.
Right. We talked about some of the TV functions, and actually, that's really the most of the stuff we know about. They're clearly saving all the game stuff, or most of the game stuff, or the big game stuff, for E3. Mm. And as much as people complained, oh, we don't see the games. Well, how long to the games? I was thinking, no, guys, this is good. They're getting all of this TV stuff out of the way, so we know that it does all this stuff. Nobody's going to ask any questions. They're not going to devote any time to it during their E3 press conference. So when that's an hour and a half, 2 hours, however long it is, they're just going to be going, boom, Destiny, boom, Call of Duty, boom, Rise, boom, Assassin's Creed, whatever. They're just going to be going from like blockbuster game to game to game. And they're going to announce new stuff. And there's going to be all this big, like very game-specific stuff. And they're not going to have to devote any time to fantasy NFL.
You know, I heard something remarkably similar on this Revision 3 show called Downloaded, and if we only had someone from that panel here to help us talk about that.
Yeah, if only.
Yeah, right? I mean, you know, we just have Zach and Justin. Oh, hey!
Hey,
Justin,
how's it going?
Yeah. Long time no see.
Yeah, it's been a while. Although, you're not seeing me right now either.
Yeah, so. True. Although, well, I did see you on that on this show that I only know about because... your friend Bob Suicide tweeted it, and you retweeted it, and I saw it, and I thought it was amazing.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yes.
For record, I watched many Revision 3 shows and saw it and was like, don't I know that guy?
How do I?
Awesome.
I watch it on my Google TV.
Perfect.
So I'm actually a little confused because I don't know for sure if you pronounce your name Severson or Severson.
No one does. It's one of the great mysteries of life.
I should go back to the Teddy Grahams video and see how you pronounce it yourself, but I didn't have time. So we'll just leave it out there. Maybe we'll link it in the show notes. Oh, God. See, is that going to happen like every time I mention you, I have to like talk about that video? I'm sure you want to bury it in the past forever and ever.
No, I love it.
Oh, okay.
fantastic. I think there's another one that never got posted too.
Oh yeah, no, yes, yeah. I was talking to Adam about that. Adam Gardner, also a co-host of the panelist, like primary panelist number one of No Top Breakfast Club.
I would say he's co-host.
Yeah, okay.
I don't really want to do the show without him unless we have no choice. I'd say he's my vink.
Is your vink?
Yeah.
Well, he does live out of the country, so that's one. He speaks another language, so he speaks the French they speak in Quebec, or Quebec, I guess, as they say in Canada. Hmm. Yeah, that works. I'll allow it.
Likes Japanese girls?
Yeah.
That joke won't go so well with this crowd.
Well, who knows? Well, maybe it will, actually. I don't know. Thanks both guys for being on the show, especially with Vink unable to attend this week.
Show goes on, man.
Yeah, right. It's got it, especially because we can't wait. We can't wait to talk about the Xbox One because, oh my God, wow. So I'll start with you, Zach. I was able to watch it live, unlike the PS4 reveal, and I wasn't hating it so bad until I was like looking at Twitter and seeing what they were saying about it, and kind of like the PS4 reveal, they were super harsh on it.
I expect people to be harsh on it. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of preconceived notions and leaked like ideas about it, and then when the stuff that was confirmed, people just assumed that all the other stuff would be confirmed. So when they said, "Oh, it's got 8 gigs of RAM," of course, that means that the DRM always on stuff is true. All the rumors are true. You confirm one rumor, you confirm them all.
Yeah.
And so people had no choice but to jump to all of the conclusions. You know, they didn't just, you know, take what was there for granted. And it didn't help that they didn't open with something like a new Halo trailer or Rise or some other big game that was going to set the tone for everything. They opened with all the TV stuff. They opened with doing sports. They showed an executive on the stage changing channels. He was changing TV channels. It was a scene out of Back to the Future 2 when Marty McFly Jr., whatever his name, you know, he starts listing off the channel names, the little pictures start coming up. That's all I can think of.
Oh my God, you're right.
You know, it's that exact thing going through. I mean, and then, of course, Twitter just went, "Read my facts."
You're fired. So wait, the Xbox One is a hoverboard? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, you don't have to use your hands, at least.
No.
Confirmed, here. Exclusive.
I would have loved to have seen some way to incorporate this, obviously, super advanced voice recognition technology into the gameplay itself. They did mention that it was sort of like a login ID by, you know, recognizing who you were, bringing up your profile specifically without even having to ask you. So that is kind of cool. But does that mean that your mom can't come into the room and tell the Xbox to turn itself off?
Gosh, I hope so. Well, maybe not my mom.
But yeah, because your mom's, yeah.
The mom of my children, maybe.
I think you bring up an interesting point, though, that like they showed off this really cool stuff, but didn't really give a full narrative as to how it all works in conjunction with playing games. They sort of did half of the story, and then we're going to get the actual meat, the content that we really care about later. Didn't seem like a ideal way to present it to a bunch of gamers.
I was thinking too, all the hate and the TV stuff. I kind of can't get on board with that because anyone who's listened to the show knows that I primarily use my Wii U as my television right now, especially because I can take the gamepad screen and watch it anywhere. But I can do that with my phone or my laptop. But I prefer to use the Wii U just because. And I've made very similar comments on this show to what they presented at their reveal with the Xbox One. So I just can't make those criticisms because those are important features to me. I mean, do you guys have alternative television viewing habits that might actually sync up with this new technology?
I actually don't have a TV subscription of any kind anymore. I do all of my stuff on demand through Apple TV. So the TV watching channel changing doesn't really speak to me in any meaningful way.
I'm concerned that I've got too much technology at this point.
Oh no.
Yeah, because I work for a television cable company, and I have subscription services out the wazoo. I've got a Google TV. I've got every input of my TV, like with some kind of HDMI enabled device. I've got PS3, Blu-ray player, Xbox, my cable box. So I've got all this stuff, and now my concern is, like, you know, when I take out the Xbox 360 and I put in the Xbox One at some point, is it going to work with all this other stuff? I mean, they showed how simple it is within context of that scene. You know, the hopefully working with some kind of cable box, or at least with an over-the-air connection. Definitely work the over-the-air. And I'm sure this is going to be a little IR blaster. It's going to plug into the back and it'll hook up to my cable box. But I'm thinking there's lots of different kinds of set-top boxes. It's probably going to work with the Scientific Linux and the Motorola's and the DirecTV. And I'm hoping it all works, that stuff. But I just have my doubts about everyone having that same seamless experience. I hope it's true. But even aside from that, you know, I guess, like I said, I got a Google TV. It has its own very unique remote with a keyboard built into it. I already use that to do web browsing and use YouTube and watch Revision 3 and Netflix and Amazon Instant Video all through my TV. It was a really cool thing when I bought it a year ago. It's still really cool today. And quite frankly, I think Google's done a very bad job of promoting this thing, because they honestly could be crushing a supposed Apple TV, you know, as like a built-in thing on its own. But they put it in a little corner of their I.O. conference and haven't been pushing it. But I think it's a really fantastic product. If you get a chance to play with one in a store, go ahead and do it. It's really cool. But in any case, I don't know how the Xbox is going to work with all that stuff. It's, you know, I was shown the ideal circumstances, and yes, it worked in a room full of people and still recognize the guy's voice and stuff, but is it going to work for me?
Well, I mean, one thing, it only has an HDMI input as far as I know. So if your set-top box doesn't have HDMI out, then you're kind of SOL. But, you know, I don't even have a set-top box of any kind, whether it's, you know, a cable box or Google TV or Apple anything or Roku or just nothing. I just have the services and no hardware. So does that mean I'm left out in the cold with this feature? Probably.
Maybe not. I hope not.
I would imagine worst case scenario is that if you do have everything plugged into the Xbox like they want you to, you can probably use the voice command to switch to that input. But if it's not, you know, one of the few things that are actually compatible with it, you'll just have to use whatever remote currently exists. That would be my guess anyway.
I just think it's funny that I had no interest in these online services, because I had cable and I had a DVR and I was paying a lot of money for those privileges. And then I sort of realized that, well, you know, Netflix and Hulu, even though the content might not be there forever, are kind of like an even better DVR, because I won't have to worry about the middle of Fringe getting corrupted every single episode every single week because the signal from my affiliate was terrible.
And that brings up an interesting point. Is this box the ultimate gift to cord cutters, or is this the or is this something that strengthens relationships between the cable companies and Microsoft and other ways of reaching TV stuff?
Well, I feel like Microsoft's getting the most flack for this because they, you know, made it front and center of a really huge presentation the whole world was watching, whereas Nintendo kind of snuck it in with the Nintendo TV feature, which wasn't even available for the Wii U at launch. And yet, like, I feel like, you know, the Wii U came at the perfect time for me so that it actually became that, like, entertainment centerpiece that Microsoft was always talking about with the 360 but never really connected with me until now. So I see this and I was like, well, you're a few months too late, or like about a year too late by the time this thing comes out. And so, like I said, I can't begrudge them for trying, because I know they've been trying for years to get me to do this kind of thing. They just, I don't know, just missed the boat with me, I guess.
Based on what you've seen, do you think that the Wii U does that better than what they showed at Microsoft's conference?
Well, I mean, I can't squish the screen and make a switch between the screen and the games, and I can't use voice commands and I can't do any of the kind of fun Windows 8 Metro type overlays that they were displaying. But
can you watch DuckTales?
I don't know. Can I?
My kids care about.
I can't play Blu-ray movies. So I don't know. It just depends on. I have a separate Blu-ray player, so that kind of sucks. But it's I feel like for me that what the Wii U does is fine. And if someone gets the Xbox One for that stuff, then that will be good enough for them. But I hate to kind of compare them when they're not quite apples to apples,
right?
But, you know, mentioning Blu-ray does remind me of another feature that wasn't even mentioned. I don't think it was mentioned at their press conference about the long rumor but now confirmed requirement of installing all of your games to your hard drive. Which, if what I also have heard is true, that's 500 gigabytes, let's say 25 gigabytes a disk for, you know, single-layer Blu-ray. That means you can have a library of 20 games before you run out of space.
Not including DLC.
Not including DLC, not including expansion to
demos,
other external hard drives, or any sort of flash drives, which they say are compatible. But
that was actually really cool. They said that the USB 3 ports on there are going to, they said, work with external hard drives, format them, and they'll work. So I can just go get a terabyte hard drive right off the bat. Boom, ready to go. It doesn't matter.
I wonder how much of the game is actually on the disc.
That's a really good question. It sounded like, and you guys touched upon this in Downloaded, which was like words right out of my brain. It seems like they just want to use the physical media as a very inconvenient way of distributing digital content, and right. and I would think that they would put everything on to your hard drive just so they don't have to worry about calling anything from the disc, because Blu-ray is slow, but also because maybe I'm reaching here, maybe they want to serve game content from the cloud as well as doing processing and doing your actual game data saves and whatnot.
Yeah, because what they said, I believe, is that once you install the game, you actually don't need the disc in the console at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can put the disc on your shelf or wherever and never actually put it in. Everything is going to be stored or pulled from the cloud. So if somebody else uses that disc, then that will sort of override your rights to it somehow. But from what I understand, you don't need the disc in the console once it's been installed. Like, it's literally only you put it in the first time, it installs it, and you're good to go.
Yeah, that was one of the other interesting reveals from that discussion you had, and Adam Sessler mentioned that it was a chip on the disc, which lines up with the patent that we had all heard about months and months ago being filed. I didn't realize it was actually in production. Well, they didn't say. It's really strange that someone could take your disc and then deauthorize you. That's a little weird to me.
Yeah, I wonder if you take the disc to a friend's house, and it seems like you'll have to sign in to play it, like, for free,
right?
Essentially, they can sign in and then purchase the game somehow. It's still sort of unclear how that's all supposed to work. But it's like if I install a game on my console and I throw the disc away or somebody else gets
right,
it,
right.
Just by virtue of them putting it in their console, does that take away my right to play it? It'll be interesting to see how that actually works.
I'm curious how this works with families and, you know, multiple players in the same console. You know, will my wife signing in to her Xbox Live account be able to access the game that I've installed
under
my account?
Yes, they have confirmed that much.
And will I be able to set the parental controls for my kids?
Yes. 'Cause
if I have this for the next 8 years as I've had my last Xbox, then obviously my kids are going to be old enough to start, you know, taking the Halo disc when I'm not looking and trying to play it.
right. No, I think it was the Kotaku article that came out after the event clarified some of those things. Because the Wired article came out first, which was like before the event, and they were able to discuss it more. And yeah, so those things are definitely confirmed. The stuff on the same console works kind of like how it does now on the 360. But it makes me wonder why they don't have the same kind of controls they do with just installing discs from the 360. You know, you just install the stuff. The disc has to be in the tray when you're playing the game. You're good to go. I don't know why that's that they had this whole huge convoluted thing, unless they're really worried about people copying discs.
I think they're just worried about not only having used games, having some kind of control over it, but also finding other means of controlling the market. I mean, because this means that if a used game goes up for sale at GameStop, let's say there's no used game fee, there's zero, but it has to be a Microsoft partner store that that can deauthorize and authorize game discs.
Right.
That that means that GameStop or whatever could potentially be cutting in Microsoft on every single used game sale, or cutting in Activision or whoever on every single used game sale, in spite of the fact that, you know, to you or me, us trading it in or buying a used game has no difference.
I think I actually read something to that effect that in a perfect world, that you, the buyer of a used game, would not actually have to pay anything extra, but that would all be sort of done by the GameStop or wherever you're buying it from, that they pay a fee to essentially unlock the disc for the next person. But I don't remember where I read that.
To stay relevant for the next 10 years.
Absolutely.
I think it's one reason why they haven't, like, you know, flipped their lids and, like, or at least some kind of press, you know, some kind of statement about how, like, Microsoft's taking them off, because they must be cut in somehow already, you know, some behind the scenes deal that isn't public yet.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if GameStop didn't already know all of this information before the general public did.
Yeah, it would have to. I mean, it's retail partners have to know all this stuff ahead of time in order for them to even think about selling it.
Which makes it curious that they can't get their story straight.
Yeah.
Right.
It's got details haven't hammered out. They got a basic agreement, but they don't have it all there. Now, one thing about streaming for the disc and versus downloading and cloud saves and all that stuff is that a lot of this stuff is not necessarily new even to the 360, because last year, Xbox's biggest, you know, first-party release was Halo 4, and it shipped on two discs. There was a second disc that you installed. Mm-hmm. I haven't spun it since.
Yep.
It had, like, all sorts of game files on there. And then, of course, I installed the first disc as well. And then even after that was done, there was a whole separate mode aside from the, you know, single player storyline and the multiplayer versus stuff, their Halo Infinity Spartan Ops campaign that was released on a weekly basis. All the cutscenes and all the audio and was all streamed from an Xbox Live server. It's not on the disc.
Hmm. Oh, wow. That's right. Yeah, I think I knew about that, actually.
You have to have an Xbox Live connection in order to get it. And, of course, you can play with other players and all stuff like that. All the terrain is all repurposed stuff from the Halo 4 campaign and from multiplayer maps. But then for the second half of the quote-unquote Season 1 that they did, episodes 6 through 10, they made you download a 2-gig patch with all the new environments for the second half of the season, which included, like, you know, the stuff on the ship and stuff in the interior of the Forerunner planet and so on. And that was really, I thought that was a really cool idea. I have my own problems with the repetitiveness of the gameplay, but the idea was awesome, of having this essentially bonus 8-hour campaign tacked on to the end of the Halo 4 campaign that took a different set of characters, set 6 months after the story had completed. And not only that, but since it was episodic, it gave you something new to do every single week. Every Monday, there was going to be a new episode. You watch the cutscene, there's 5 new missions. You grab your friends, or you can just jump online and find random people and do those missions.
And I wonder if that's the sort of model they're looking at for this Halo TV show that they're doing. If they're going to be integrating gameplay with the live action, assuming live action show that they're creating.
Oh, they gotta
this be. Could be Spartan Ops Season 2. I would be so happy.
Oh my goodness. Wow, that...
They gotta fix Commander... What's her name? I can't remember her name. Jesus.
I guess it's good that Vink isn't here because his eyes would be glazing over right now. It's like, I don't play first person shooters. I don't care about any of this TV stuff. Oh my God, when you guys stop talking about it. Go ahead, Justin.
So,
I'm sorry.
So just like his reaction probably to the entire Microsoft press conference.
More or less.
That's the real reason he's not here. He just does not care.
That's right.
So my question was, is that I didn't play the Spartan Ops. Can you go back and still play those episodes?
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, you can play them all by yourself, or you can still invite people into a private room. Every week they update the playlist, just like they do with the multiplayer campaign. So sometimes they'll do like best ofs, like with five like random missions that people really liked, or because there's a whole set of combinations and stats that you have to build up using just that mission, like, you know, eliminate so many grunts, eliminate so many knights. They've been, when they do weeks like that, they favor missions that have a ton of knights or a ton of snipers or a ton of this kind of enemy or vehicle type. That way people can have a chance to build up those high-level combinations. But yeah, they're essentially, now that the season's over, they're rerunning it week by week and running them on legendary difficulty too, so you can make sure you get the achievements.
What does that mean practically, rerunning them?
Well, there's no matchmaking for like the episodes that are not current that week. You can still play it, and you can still invite. Like if I said I want to play episode 4, mission 5, I could still invite you and Justin in, and we could play it. Okay. But if that week they're running episode 6, then we couldn't do matchmaking to find a fourth person. We'd have to play episode 6, and the playlist would be for players looking for episode 6.
Man, like, how'd that work with the TV show though, right? Because like your how well you perform and like some mission that they might attach to a particular episode would not affect the outcome of the series because it would have been filmed already.
Well, that's another problem I have with the with Spartan Ops, is that the actual performance of the game doesn't really matter too much. You get some fun playing through this and trying different stuff, but ultimately you have just about infinite lives going into these things. So it doesn't matter how many times you die, you're still going to eventually complete the mission. It's only when they have stuff like protect this entity or hit this specific switch before all the scientists are dead or whatever, that's the only time you actually might have to fail a mission.
This is so fascinating to me because, like, I think this is the big disconnect, like, you know, old school gamers, like, you know, Fink and I. The reason we do this show, because it's like, you know, sort of retro-based stuff around contemporary game news. And like, you have stuff like this where it's a more transient experience versus like playing Mario Brothers 100 years from now. It's going to be the same experience that people had in the 80s. Like, you can't have the same experience regardless of like the servers being spun down. Like, you just can't do it because it's like this very temporal thing. And I have a huge problem with that.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest issue with it too, is that, like, obviously it's not going to be the same experience later, but at what point in the future will these servers for just getting this content at all go down? You know, if they are doing actual computing in the cloud to help run these games, what happens when those servers get sunsetted? Are you going to be able to actually play any of the games in any state? If you can't, that's sort of a huge drag for both archival purposes and, you know, kids growing up now will want to go back and play the games that they really enjoyed as children, and they're not. Are they going to be able to do that? Nobody really knows.
Do kids go back now and play the games that we grew up with as kids, or are we just kind of fooling ourselves?
Well, I mean, as far as, you know, kids growing up now, you know, their kids right now, they're playing. You know, Halo 4 is their, you know, one of their first games. When they're in their 20s and 30s, are they going to want to go back and play Halo 4?
Sure.
Probably. You know, the same way that we return to NES and Super Nintendo. And it's possible they won't be able to do that with Xbox One.
This is another question that's already been answered, because Halo 2 doesn't exist anymore.
Well, Halo 2 multiplayer over Xbox Live doesn't exist anymore, but you can hook up multiple Xboxes in the same room together.
There are two maps that were not released on disc that were only by download, and they're gone forever.
Oh, God. Did I even get those?
Mm. I had them, but then I got a new Xbox and I don't think I transferred over.
So those who listened to the show before know that I had this problem where you can't move any original Xbox content from your 360 hard drive to a new one. Because I had that problem. I tried to go from my original, what was it? What was the core to the new design? I couldn't move it because I had talked to Xbox support about this, and they're like, well, if it's not authorized to be moved from one console to the next, then you can't do it. And so all my Halo 1 and Halo 2 stuff and a bunch of other games are just locked onto this one hard drive. It's infuriating. But this is worse. Like, so the first episode of this show was Vink and me talking about staring down this like abyss of there being no retro gaming in the future, mostly based around DLC stuff. And just like add-ons to games, so like at worst you wouldn't have the full game experience, quote unquote, but you might at least get the core based on whatever disc you had. But like we're talking about this whole other animal now, like cloud computing is frightening to me, mostly because like I barely trust it to like do something like Dropbox or whatever. I can't imagine them offloading processing to the quote unquote cloud, which is really just their personal cache of servers that will go down one day. Like it'll definitely happen.
Yeah, they're not gonna keep them up in like forever. There's gonna be a time where they're gonna close them down, repurpose those servers. They're gonna do something with them because the general populace doesn't care about playing Halo 6 anymore.
All for freedom and for pleasure. Nothing lasts forever.
I'm kidding. So I don't know. Does it matter if this stuff doesn't live in perpetuity? Or should we just like be more casual about this sort of thing, for lack of a better term? It's just entertainment, right? It's just a hobby. It's not that important, right?
I can't see Louis C.K. live again. There's a lot of bands I can't see live again. I'll never see Louis C.K. play the set he played when I saw him back in October or whatever it was.
But you could record that set and play it again over and over again if you really wanted to.
I saw Stone Temple Pilots play at Summerfest with Scott Weiland singing, and he doesn't sing for that band anymore. So there's all sorts of entertainment experiences that I have experienced. I saw the Ramones play in 96. Half of them are dead now. There's just not – there's all sorts of stuff that's not going to happen. The sooner that gamers can accept the fact that whatever time they've got right now playing this game is fleeting. Not only that, but, boy, just stop saving everything. This is a rant for another day or something.
Well, maybe not because the music industry has been used.
I want to have, an archive of certain things. I want to be able to go back to certain experiences, but for the most part, boy, just stop worrying about saving everything. Just enjoy it while it's here, and if it leaves you, live with the memory, man. Don't try to relive the memory.
Look who you're talking to.
But I think there's a couple arguments to make with that, though, because you may not necessarily be able to see a band live, but you can give those CDs or tapes or records to your children and say, "I saw these guys live." You can experience a part of that by listening to this music.
They can watch a Let's Play video.
Okay. Not if Nintendo and Sega have their way.
Yeah, exactly. But another thing is, with games like, the whole our games art thing, with games like Bioshock being a great argument for that, it's you can go to a museum and you can see a painting and you can watch a movie. You may not be able to play that game, and if games continue to move towards that, very immersive artistic experience, the thought of not being able to experience that down the road, that's a little scary.
Yeah, like you can get a CD with the music on it, even if it's not like the live recording that you saw. There's at least some version of it out there that you can enjoy in perpetuity, at least so far. And which makes me want to bring up Redigi, if anyone's ever heard of that. Anyone?
What's that?
Okay, so there's this company that was trying to find a way to resell digital content. They recently lost a lawsuit allowing them to do this, but this really strange precedent was sent by the judge in the case, which held that they didn't really have the rights to resell digital content because of the definition of the first sale doctrine, like written back in 76 or whatever it was, and they beefed up the copyright a little bit more, but allowed people to do things like record stuff onto tapes and 8-tracks, whatever was available. or like, you know, you buy a record, you can sell it again. And that's kind of what's butting heads with Xbox right now, and Microsoft's philosophy is that the game is more than this physical thing they're selling you. But that's, we can go forever talking about that philosophically. But you know what this case held, trying to like read to the strict interpretation of what a record was, quote unquote, is that because there is no physical media with the MP3, and you can't really guarantee that someone has deleted the MP3 from their system after this software has been installed, kind of does this policing of your system to make sure it's not actually on there, and then says, okay, you know, you can now have the greatest hits of Hall & Oates on someone else's computer because they sold the rights to this MP3. His ruling was that you had to actually sell the device with the digital content on it, and that would be the quote-unquote record that would be up for sold under the first sale doctrine. It just craziness. I barely understand it even talking about it. Did you guys even follow that?
It doesn't seem practical. The business nor the ruling. So,
yeah, it seems like trying to fit something into a law that was, of course, not written with modern technology in mind, and that's just a losing proposition any way you look at it.
I can't stand this indecision married with lack of vision.
I just look at that, and I, for one thing, I kind of appreciate the judicial restraint not to rewrite copyright law in this one case. On the other hand, it's like it just goes to show that the government cannot keep up with how technology is changing all the time, especially when we're talking about putting stuff in the cloud, not just data, but processing that can't be duplicated, because you're not going to like store the vectors of my particular view in a multiplayer match in perpetuity. There's like no point in doing that. But has anyone worked with Windows Azure? Because it sounds like that's the actual platform that this cloud stuff is going to be put into. Probably not.
Is that Blue, or is this something? Is that like a server thing?
It's a server thing. So like, I'm a programmer. I've had to like deal with the Azure thing before, and that scares me on this whole other level, because it's not that great for one thing. And you know, Microsoft support is kind of interesting in the regard that when you have a business and you're trying to use it, they are really good about asking you frequently whether you want them to or not, if everything's going okay. And of course, it's not going okay because the product is not ready for prime time, in my opinion. But they won't do anything to fix it because they can't. They're just support. And they give them your feedback, and that's all you can really do. I'm really scared for games using this technology for anything whatsoever. But it does remind me of how games are run now, and the reason why you can still do like local Halo 2 matches. Because what you can do is you start up a match. Someone in the multiplayer is set up as like the host for the match, which is why when people drop out of those like Halo 3 matches, Halo 4 matches, or whatever, it takes a long time to reconnect because someone else has to be set up as the new host. So what if instead they offload this to some Azure server somewhere, and that server is the host, so you don't have these connectivity problems as much?
But that my also, God, we've been asking for dedicated servers forever.
Right, but okay, that means that you cannot, once the servers go down, do any kind of local matchmaking again, because the thing that's the server, the actual like code might not even be on the disk. Like before, there was this thing where you had the disk, it knew everything how it had to do to be a host or just be, you know, one of the people connecting to the host. Now that information is somewhere else, not even on your game disk. And as soon as that goes away, you had no more multiplayer whatsoever.
StarCraft players already know this.
Right, yeah, I know. Battle.net's been doing this for years. But now it's moving into the console realm.
I think there was a report on, I think it was Engadget, that said that the processing was going to be limited to things that that weren't dependent on latency, like physics, lighting, things like that.
Right, okay.
I'm not sure how that would actually, like if those servers weren't able to be connected, would the game still work? Just wouldn't look as good? Or would they just not function at all?
That's a really good question. I would guess they wouldn't function at all, just based on how the game's probably coded to expect some kind of response from the server, and if it doesn't get it, it might just not work.
my God, it's like a super high-tech N64 expansion pack.
Oh my God, you're right.
More textures.
Right.
I plug it in.
This
there is a new Perfect Dark game coming.
Please no. It makes me I'm like excited and just terrified at the same time. Mostly terrified because I know in practical terms how well this does not work in the real world. At least so far. And so the stuff about like always on seems to be like the tip of the iceberg, you know, like always connected to the internet anyway. Like people are talking about like, well, maybe he has to call in once every 24 hours, 72 hours. But at some point you have to be online to go offline, like the CM model or whatever. But like if you're doing cloud computing, you just cannot play this game without internet. It's just not going to happen for you. And I get scared. Wow, sorry, I'm also trying to thought here. I get scared because I feel like something else is happening too with the platform itself. You see Microsoft trying to get into the hardware space now, kind of like how Apple's been doing. They've had the Windows Phone. I think it's up to Windows 8 now, right? And
Phone was the first one, but
yeah. But like that's been kind of like the source bed for like how Windows 8 is going to be going, and I expected the Metro stuff to be worked into the Xbox One, and it has been. What I learned about the tech specs has been that there's they mentioned the three operating systems during the press conference. What they weren't saying was that they're virtualized, and the internet's run on virtualized servers. For instance, like I'm sure, you know, the No Topic Required podcast is hosted on a virtualized server. The Famicom Dojo podcast is. The Power TV stuff's all virtualized. So when you hear stuff like the 300,000 servers out there, they're probably largely virtualized. That's one thing. The second thing is that the actual console itself being virtualized means that there's a lot of inefficiency built into the console itself. They have to run Windows 8 all the time to do stuff like the Kinect background stuff, probably the achievement background stuff, anything that the game itself doesn't have to worry about, which leaves only so much stuff for the game to be able to do in a virtualized hardware memory space setting, which to most people doesn't mean anything, but I'll just say that it means it's going to be not as efficient. I am totally losing people here, I'm sure. I apologize deeply.
Here's the way I'm thinking about it, is that the Xbox 360 has done an amazing amount of work over the last 7 years with 512 megs of RAM.
And that's the third device that Microsoft has had. They've had this 360 before the phone or the Surface. And what have they done with it? It seems like they're going this other direction. Am I wrong?
So what I'm saying is that like with an Xbox One, there's significantly more horsepower there. So to me, it doesn't really matter if it's virtualized or whatever. It's because it's going to be able to handle so much more. I've been saying for years, you know, the graphics don't matter because all it does is just drive up game budgets and art budgets and whatever else. Not that I don't think art's important, but you know what I mean? It's just the graphics are not as important as several many million other things within the game. And that the processing powers, it means being able to do more interesting things with your character in the game, and like things like physics and whatever. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't care about if it's virtualized or if it's on the disk or if it's on the system or wherever. As long as it works better than the system it is now, that's all you have to. It's like the old politician things. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Is Xbox One better off than Xbox 360 was when it launched? And as long as that answer is yes, it's gonna become a success.
And it is going to be up to, you know, the developers to decide, you know, how much do they want to offload to these servers and how much are they going to rely on the system itself. Like a skilled developer, I would imagine, is probably not going to let their game break if they can't render lighting from a server somewhere.
One would hope.
Exactly. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see who does what with it. And if there are really creative things that this actually is a huge benefit for, like it's going to make games significantly better for some reason, or if it really is just like, well, you can use this if you want, it's going to be okay, but if you don't use it, it'll be fine. Like, it'll be interesting to see where that ends up in the next 5 years.
If I may go down the rabbit hole a little bit further, calling back to the downloaded show that you were on, I know you guys are talking about, well, maybe this will be like a 10-year console. I think you guys aren't thinking big enough. Like, if they're virtualizing everything, they're doing this cloud computing, if they're virtualizing the actual hardware itself, then that means that the Xbox One as a platform, as a physical device, matters about as much as your iPhone as a physical device. Like, it's stored somewhere else, and then you can get a new Xbox One that's a little beefier, and then dump all your stuff back onto it. It's a virtual console now.
I think one thing that Adam said is that somebody told him, you know, this might be the last box that they actually do. You know, like, the 360 has had the longest life cycle of any dedicated console ever, you know? And so, given that the Xbox One is so much more powerful, that it's going to be pretty good for a long time. And, you know, something that Zach just said, you know, graphics are mattering less and less because we're getting to a point where they can't really look any better. Like, the jump from 8-bit to 16-bit to 3D graphics, those were huge jumps.
Yeah, definitely.
As, you know, the last few consoles, it's, you know, the Wii looked better than the GameCube. The Wii U looks better than the Wii, but not dramatically. Like, there are things that it does better, but for the most part, they're pretty similar. It's just making small little refinements. So given how much more powerful the Xbox One is and that they seem to really have a real complete sort of idea of how this is supposed to integrate into your, not just gaming, but into your life, into the way you interact with your media, being able to just throw updates, throw new content from the cloud, why would you need another box?
Yeah. And I think what's going to end up happening really is that, and I kind of theorized this last episode before we even heard what the Xbox reveal was, that especially with the PS4 going towards the PC architecture as well, that it's not going to be the hardware that matters anymore. It's going to be the services. And so when I heard all this stuff about Microsoft kind of positioning itself as like a TV services company and a game services company, where you're not really selling a game console and discs that they run on it, they're selling this multimedia device that happens to play games that might be stored in the cloud, at least in some part. And it's like they're positioning themselves for that long game of where the box becomes irrelevant, and that's still scary to me.
Yeah, it's not even what can the box do, but it's what can you do with the technology that's being presented? How can you share your content? How can you interact with your content? And it's not going to matter how many, you know, polygons it can render in a given second. We're not talking about that anymore. We're talking about the actual experience of interacting and sharing, and Microsoft and Sony are both doing those two things in different ways, and I think that's going to be the biggest way that they distinguish themselves going forward.
One of the things that I noticed here is that, you know, all of the many requirements that are there, and we haven't even really talked about how this would be affected by the international market, because there's all these services that to a lot of people who've lived through the Xbox 360 and seen, you know, Netflix working here but not there, it's this game being available here and not there, this service being available here but not there. There's a lot of people, you know, overseas who very skeptically looked at this whole thing and went, yeah, I'm not going to be able to use most of this stuff. I don't care about the NFL.
And what's this football you Americans talk about?
Yeah. And I think this drives home something that the Xbox One is not for everybody, but Microsoft's bet is that the people who can or will buy it will hold it up entirely, that it doesn't need to sell as many units as the Xbox 360, because I think they feel like they can make more profit off the people who do buy it than they do off the individual 360 buyer now. You know, the same way that the Apple Macintosh system for years had a much lower install rate than Windows. I'm sure it still does, but I don't think the Gulf is probably different now. I'm not sure where it is. I haven't checked on that number in decades. But one of the things that Mac always bragged about is they have a much higher software attach rate. People bought more software for their Macs. And I think that's Microsoft doing something similar here. I think they're betting that people are going to use this. The people who buy this are going to buy way into it. They're not just going to be using it passively as their Netflix box anymore. They're going to be using all the stuff here. And obviously with the reset of a console generation, like right now I've got a Wii, I've got an Xbox 360, I've got a PS3. You know, whatever game comes out, I can buy it. That's it. Full stop. I don't have to think about, well, I've only got this system. You know, whatever third-party game I have to buy on this system now. It's like now if one's notably better on this console, or if there's a sale price on the other one, I'll buy it that way. I don't think about I'm fairly platform agnostic, but with the start of a new generation, people are going to have to pick and choose. This console wars have been reignited in a way because you're going to have to pick, okay, I'm an Xbox guy. I guess I'm buying all my games on Xbox for a while because I'm not going to shell out another $400 or $500 for a PlayStation 4.
I think you're right. And I think you can take the Apple sort of comparison even a little bit deeper in that, like, Apple comes out with new stuff that just sort of, you know, they're sort of backwards compatibility doesn't really exist. You know, they come out with new hardware. It doesn't support the things that came out even 2 years ago. So the fact that not everyone can take advantage of all this stuff, I think Microsoft realizes that if you have to cater to everybody, you're not going to be able to push forward with these really cool, interesting things that are a big deal to some people.
And this is Microsoft that is still running off of a 16-bit kernel for Windows that was built. Well, okay, I take it back. I guess with Windows XP, they went to the 32-bit fully, but, you know, like more or less, there's stuff in the code that's like from the 16-bit operating system. They have not been able to move forward with a Windows operating system in any significant step for a long time, and this could be their chance. And I feel like this is one of the outs they're going to have from people who are like, I can hear them listening to this podcast and being like, but. If I can't play my games next generation, it won't matter. But we're trying to tell you there's not going to be a next generation. The Xbox is going to be a Cylon. Okay, their buy is not going to matter. They can download somewhere else. Like, I feel like Microsoft did a really smart thing last generation. With the 360. I got a new one. You know, I had my core. Like I said, I upgraded to the new one. I didn't have to. Like, it wasn't, didn't have more memory. Didn't have a better processor necessarily. It was just more power efficient. It came with a bigger hard drive than the one I have, like 20 gigabyte one for the core that I bought separately and attached to it. Like, you know, the big updates with the operating system, which any Xbox can run. And I guess that 16 gigabyte limit is going to be lifted for the Xbox One. But, you know, they added features like that so that the memory cards aren't an issue anymore. All those little incremental steps. And, like, what if the Xbox One literally is their last console, like, you know, like you've been saying, but like, it just port to the next system, to the next box, to the next thing. All your games, because it's on x86 hardware now, will work in perpetuity for who knows how long, indefinitely. We're not talking about 10 years, we're talking about 100 years. As long as Microsoft's around running their servers, maybe this isn't as bad as we all think it is. And now the crucifixion begins.
Nah, forget that. I got like 100 Xbox Live Arcade games. Now, the thing that everybody needs to remember is that my Xbox 360 doesn't turn back into a pumpkin at midnight. It's not going to suddenly stop working. Except for the millions of people who had Xbox 360s that's suddenly stopped working. But that's kind of the point. The point is that they say they're going to be servicing it, selling this thing for like another 5 years or something like that. So there's going to be plenty of Xbox 360 stuff going for a while. I think just the same way that we saw the PlayStation 2 release God of War 2 and amongst other notable releases after the PlayStation 3 already came out, I think we're still going to see some Xbox 360 stuff that's going to be worth our while for at least another year or two to come.
Maybe yeah, it's just like, sorry, when the DS came out and Nintendo said, "Oh no, boy, it's gonna be like that," right?
Yeah, that third pillar, I remember it well.
What's the third pillar for Microsoft? Is it Surface?
Probably.
Sorry, I had to get that in there before you moved on.
Oh goodness, yeah.
Now I put some questions up to my Facebook friends, fans, and such. And I think this is actually a good one for the panel, really. Our friend James Chapman from the Not Safe for Water Coolers podcast. We'll get the proper plug in there. He says, what is the price point for you to upgrade? Is the XB1 at $500? And, you know, how long can you make the 360 last off that? So I think that $500 is way too much.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, for me to spend on it. And I think that has far more to do with my budget than a sense of value. It seems like it's worth $500. Is it worth $500 of my dollars? No. But if I had, let's say I had more money than I have now, you know what I'm saying? Then yeah, it's worth $500. Sure, totally. But, you know, me being a father of two, I think of many, many other things that $500 can be spent on, like groceries.
it's amazing how much a family of four can eat in a month.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm buying a gallon of milk every other day now. I don't even drink milk. I'm allergic to milk, as my friends know. And I'm buying milk every day. What the hell? Anyway, but I think when it hits that $400 level, I'm a little bit closer. Because then if I have $500 worth of funny money, then it's not such a big deal for me to go, okay, I can buy the game, I can buy the system, and probably one crucial accessory for around that $500, or the game and the system with tax, you know, without spending much more than that $500 limit. But really, honestly, I think the real thing's going to be when Destiny or Halo 5 or some other game that's not going to come out on a current gen system comes out. And quite frankly, I guess Destiny's coming out on 360 and PlayStation 3 as well. Mm. I'm probably not going to buy it for one of the current gen systems unless I can help it.
So that means you're definitely getting an Xbox One?
It means I'm definitely going to be getting some kind of... Yes, I will say I'm going to get an Xbox One unless the very first year of this completely disappoints me. And I haven't bought a system on launch day since Dreamcast. I've waited...
We know how that turned out.
I've waited a year for everything. I don't regret buying the Dreamcast because of all the game systems that have come out in the last 15 years, it was the only system with a launch lineup that was actually good. So there's no problem there. In fact, I would say the dominance of Call of Duty in the current gaming landscape is based entirely on the fact that Microsoft positioned Perfect Dark as the ultimate shooter for the Xbox 360 when it debuted, and it wasn't really that good. Call of Duty 2 came out the same day at the same time, and it was really good. And so people bought Call of Duty World of War.
Yeah.
People bought Modern Warfare and everything else, and the rest is history. It got people to stop thinking about whatever the first-party game was and look at the third-party game. That's kind of turned everything.
And now we have Ghosts instead of Perfect Dark 7 or whatever.
We've got Call of Duty Dogs. It's better than Dogs. Dogs of Duty, World at Wolf.
Just another reason to dislike Perfect Dark Zero.
Ouch.
It won another Perfect Dark game. You know why? Because I want them to do it right. I think it deserved more than that. And I'm not even like a big Perfect Dark booster. I think that Rare needs to come back. We need them back.
If you want a good Perfect Dark game, just play Time Splitters.
Time Splitters isn't even back yet. Although, I guess Crytek bought whatever Free Radical when they went out of business. Yeah. And there's talk of them doing, either Kickstarter or something for a new Time Splitters game.
I don't even. Oh God, yeah.
It's also, of course, it's somebody's building some kind of Time Splitters like remake based on like the CryEngine 3 or whatever for PC. Which, of course, everybody's always remaking some old game in some modern engine. But still, I would like to see a new Time Splitters game for sure.
Well, Justin, will you buy an Xbox One at some point?
Definitely at some point. I mean, for me, it's all about, you know, is there going to be a game at launch that I'm going to care about playing? If not, then I'll wait. But I will eventually have one. Everyone else is going to have one, and I'm going to want to play games with all my friends. So it's going to happen.
I know.
Maybe not for $500. But.
Yeah, right. Well,
That's got to be the, you know, people accuse Justin of being the hipster, but that's the least hipster thing anyone could say. After everyone else has got it.
Oh my God.
I'll wait until everyone else has got it. Then I'll get one.
Well done, sir.
I didn't hear it first.
Well, right. Everyone else is going to get it, and then it'll be old enough that I'll feel okay getting it.
It's vintage.
Oh, exactly. My God.
Right. Especially in 20 years when it's still around.
Yeah, exactly.
I know Vink's a big NeoGAF-ite. What do you call someone who's like on the gaff a lot? I don't know. Well, anyway, so he's very tuned in to like the way they talk about and think about things, and I've just been seeing Twitter especially just blowing up about this and this crazy screed by one poster, and I read that and I'm just like, wow, it's games, it's not that important. I mean, it kind of feels like it is kind of going to our rights as consumers on one hand, but on the other, it's, I don't know, if it's really about capitalism, let the free market decide if it's a good idea or not. And don't like come out swinging like you have something to lose in all of this. Do you really? I don't think we do. So I'm going to sit back and wait. And I don't know if I'll spend $500 on it either. But I bet you at some point the killer app's going to come along that I'm going to want to use it for. I don't feel like I need it for the semi-professional curiosity that I bought like another copy of Mass Effect 3 for on the Wii U. But I think, yeah, at some point I will. I guess you can still buy the console used, right? Whatever that's worth.
It's interesting that all three of us had the same answer. Yeah, as soon as there's a game worth playing, we'll get it.
Right, which is the answer for any console, really. It's like but
that's the one answer. That's the one question answer that was not presented to that position. That whole thing. I can't talk. That's the one answer that was not given. Well, that was our ultimate question.
Right.
Yeah, unless you really want the new Madden or FIFA or Call of Duty, then there's not anything for you yet. You know, I know that eventually there will be those games because of course all my favorite developers are making games for this new system. You know, there's going to be a Batman Arkham Planet or something. You know,
right?
You know, there's going to be another one of these blockbuster games. And if it's not another blockbuster game in that series, if it's not Uncharted 4 on PlayStation 4, then you know that it's going to be a new game from Naughty Dog, or it's going to be a new game from Bungie, or it's going to be a new game from well, maybe not Infinity Ward, but Respawn. There's going to be a new game from those people who gave you all those great experiences last time. That was something I really liked about this generation. You saw a lot of developers start new franchises, and I want to see more of that.
So I feel like, Zach, that's the reason why they're kind of going out front with their TV services and other stuff, because there might not be that killer app, but they want you to use it as your home entertainment system anyway until it comes along. And that is precisely the logic I used to buy my Wii U, which is why I cannot fault them for it. Because people have been asking me, I'm interested in Wii U. What games can I play? And I can't tell them anything, honestly. Well, Super Mario, what?
Super Mario World.
Right, yeah. It says virtual console stuff for systems you can buy, not more cheaply, but you can get the authentic quote-unquote experience. And then, you know, maybe you can buy the version of Mass Effect that you can't get any DLC for, or maybe you can buy the version of Injustice that you can't play online with your friends because there's no matchmaking rooms you can create and the DLC is coming out in the summer, or maybe there's the version of Batman that you can get on other consoles but doesn't have the gamepad stuff. You know, I buy a lot of stuff on the eShop, which is already digitally, you know, DRM and just dependent on the reauthorization of servers if my internal flash memory ever dies. Stuff that I can't defend Nintendo also doing, but I'm totally bought into it. So I will think that people will buy the system for those reasons. And yeah, but it does make me think about something else with like the Wii being the last traditional console probably ever. If all this stuff, if we're having like a virtualized console then for the Xbox One, And a friend of mine pointed this out to me, who I met over the weekend, goes by Vashel Grimm on Twitter. I don't think he meant to pose a question to this podcast necessarily, but he kind of did in a roundabout way. Does that mean that Microsoft can no longer legally charge licensing fees to develop for their platform? Because now it's just a PC.
Well, I think that they can, given that they sort of still have to be the ones that say okay to have it work on the console. Like without them, you know, certifying the game, I think they have gone on record saying that like they're as an indie developer, you won't be able to self-publish. Like you'll need to go through somebody who already has some sort of agreement with Microsoft. Mm. So legally speaking, I don't know, but it seems like I don't think that's going to change much.
The thing is, they had an indie channel on, or they have an indie channel now.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why they couldn't just do that going forward.
Well, they had XNA.
They don't want to.
They had XNA and they shut it down. Like, it was a cheapest free development option and essentially no one used it. Or people who did didn't make them any money. So that got left out in the cold just this year. But I think about what it means to, I think Zach, before the show, you mentioned how it's like, just like, you know, you switch a button and then it's like, oh, boom, I got my PS4 version. Boom, I got my Xbox One version. Boom, I got my PC version of this game. And, you know, you don't need a license to develop for Windows 8. DirectX is a free SDK. You can, you know, Azure isn't free, but you can pay for the services and you can use those and you're, you know, free to develop Windows 8 applications, Metro apps, anything, essentially. And you don't even have to use Windows Azure as your cloud computing source necessarily for Windows. Maybe you do for Xbox One, but is there going to come a time when there's going to be some kind of legal challenge? Like, well, you know, the Xbox has sort of a proprietary OS for the game stuff, but everything else, it's like a Windows 8 kernel stripped down, of course, but I can develop for a Windows 8 machine. Why do I need a license to develop for the Xbox One? And who knows? I think there might be a potential legal question there.
I think it's definitely a good question. Given that I'm not intimately familiar with, does Microsoft have like a Windows app store that like they have like featured apps that you can download directly through the device, like on a Surface?
They do for the Metro stuff now. So Windows 8 has that built in. I'm sure it's been on the phone since Windows 7 phone came out. And the Surface, I'm sure, only runs on that stuff. So
are those apps, do they have to go through sort of Microsoft certification, like the way that Apple forces apps to go through their certification for the App Store?
I imagine so. And yet, if that's the case, how are there so many YouTube ripping applications on their App Store? Yeah, I'm not really sure.
I don't know.
So, it's definitely a good question, and we'll see. And if, you know, Microsoft is trying to be as Apple as possible in this stuff, then yeah, maybe they have similar legal grounds to stand on. I just, you know, the thing that my friend had mentioned to me was that this kind of goes back to the whole Tengen, which is it?
I have no idea.
Let's just say Tengen.
I was going to say Tengen, but okay.
Well, I want to say Tengen too, but like Vink's one that says Tengen, so I feel like I got to like be Vink while he's not here. I think FPSs are terrible, and everyone should play JRPGs. Was that a good impression?
It was good. Yeah,
thanks. But it goes back to that in the lawsuit with Nintendo, where they essentially reverse engineered a 10 NES chip, which is the lockout chip for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Also, like, committed some kind of patent fraud by saying that they were actually able to get the schematics from the patent office falsely to do this, because they originally would reverse engineer actual cartridges and put them into their cartridges, but that wasn't a very viable option long term. So they went to court, and Nintendo eventually won, you know, saying that, you know, we can, you know, our licensing practices may be draconian, but we can still force people to like have these licenses. You can only release 5 games a year, et cetera, which went by the wayside when there was actual competition in the form of the Genesis. And then all those third parties jumped ship. And, well, that's history, but that's the sort of history I guess listeners to this podcast are interested in, right?
Yeah.
Doing my grace face right now. But so yeah, I just wonder if that 20-year-old precedent is going to face some kind of legal challenge, and I guess it only remains to be seen. Probably not, I'm guessing, but well, I guess any last thoughts then? I think we've covered the gamut.
I'll just say I'm going to read one more question.
Oh, sure.
Looks like we didn't really get to the second one. Ernie, another No Topic Required regular, says, what feature are you looking forward to the most? What do you think are the biggest setback for the system? I think we already dealt with all the setbacks. If we answered the question. But what do you say would be one feature you can really see yourself, man, I can see myself using that. That looks cool.
I think for me the upgraded Kinect sensor is probably the coolest thing to me, despite sort of the creepy, like, always on, always listening privacy concerns. Being able to walk into my living room and say Xbox on, have it instantly recognize that I'm there, log me in. Like, the fewer buttons that I actually have to press to get things going, I think that's cool. So that sort of like puts us into like Star Trek territory with like how futuristic it all seems. I think that's really cool. How they're going to integrate that into the actual gameplay, I have no idea. Hopefully they do it in a compelling way, but I think that's probably the thing that speaks to me the most so far.
Oh, man. Xbox Arch. that's actually a really good answer, and one I would actually have to agree with, because as I mentioned before about, I use this Google TV, I think it's a really great product. It does take a couple seconds to boot up. Like, I turn on the TV, and even though it boots straight to the TV, so if I'm whatever my cable box or satellite box is set on, it'll start showing that right away. I can't get into the menu until it's like the OS has started up yet. It's smart enough to know that you're probably just going to watch TV. But if my kids want to watch DuckTales, I got to get into the Amazon streaming, which means I got to like wait for the home screen to be able to become available. And it takes like a good 30, 40 seconds to get in there. But if I can say Xbox on, Amazon, DuckTales, boom, and it starts up, even if it's 15 seconds, even if they have to go through step by step, the fact that it's always on and doesn't need to warm up, that is really attractive. Also, what's really attractive, that box, I think it's a cool-looking box. I like that it looks like a piece of high-end theater equipment and not a toy like every other console. So that's just me personally.
It looks like it's such a PC, though. And like if you saw it, like the teardown at all, the reason half of that thing is venting is because half of it is a massive heat sink.
Yeah.
It's insane. I don't know. Okay, so as a Wii U owner, I guess I can't complain about the instant switching, even if it is through virtualized hardware, because, you know, until the spring update, I had to wait 30 seconds to even leave Netflix to go into Hulu or whatever, because I'm switching from season one to season two of Once Upon a Time. So, yeah. Justin, did you have that final thought?
I think that I've talked enough about the Xbox One in the last week.
Oh, I'm sorry, but thank you for coming.
thanks for having me. It's been great.
Does anybody else think it's crazy that they took the start button out of Windows 8 and then they took the start button off the controller?
That would even, yeah, right? Like it's more like they renamed those buttons and they don't really necessarily function any differently. It's just like the input to the operating system probably is like, oh, it's menu versus whatever the hell the select button used to be. And they can operate the same way. It's just a conceptual box they're going to put you in. Ooh, conceptual Xbox. Oh, my head hurts.
Yeah, the start doesn't really mean anything, and it hasn't meant anything for years. So,
do you have to like wave your hand in the bottom left corner of like the Kinect to get that to turn on? I
don't know. When will the Kinect know that you're not trying to get it to do anything?
I was wondering about that because during the presentation he would talk about the features and the Xbox wouldn't do anything, and there was even a point where he didn't even say Xbox beforehand and it did something, and I'm wondering if it was even really happening live, if it was just like the technical version of a lip sync or something.
So like if say you're playing a game and say your wife, girlfriend, significant other, whatever you know, they want you to stop playing, and you're chatting with friends online. You're like, oh yeah, you know, my girlfriend wants me to turn my Xbox off.
Right.
Does it just turn off immediately?
That's a fantastic question. Great. Now I'm going to have to get one on day one and test that out. Way to
say
go.
It's like a Blu-ray movie. It's like, yeah, you know what? After this, I think I want to play some Halo. And then the Blu-ray stops and Halo pops.
Right. Yeah. Does it know it's not being talked to? I was always wondering about that on Star Trek, too, which is where this is all going, right? Like, it's, you mentioned the merch already. It's just, it's totally the Star Trek thing. And that, honestly, that's kind of cool.
Does the Xbox talk back ever? It seems to do stuff, but it's not Siri or, you know, Majel Barrett or anything like that. It just does whatever you say.
Yeah, I wonder if it will have any sort of like feedback. Like if you tell it to do something, like obviously Xbox on, it's going to turn on. But once it's on, will it ask you to confirm commands? Right. And if so, does that sort of break the whole seamless, I can transition from this to this very quickly? Does that ruin that experience? But if they don't do that, then that might also be bad.
Be a great opportunity to sell DLC. Console, because it's like you could have all your orders confirmed by Master Chief or or by Soap McTavish or or by Gordon Freeman and just be quiet. I don't know.
If it does talk back to you at all, I would be very surprised if they don't have some sort of customizable voices for it.
So that I will pay for, as opposed to a helmet for my avatar.
They're bundled together.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
Well, then that's okay, too. You buy the Master Chief avatar, you get the Master Chief voice.
Okay.
I think that'd be fine. The more stuff you bundle together, the more value you add, that's a positive thing.
Are avatars still in there?
Oh yeah,
on 360. Oh yeah.
No, on
Xbox Class One. Oh yeah, do we know that for sure?
I don't think they showed any, but I can't see them dropping that.
I mean, it's built into Windows 8 now, so I doubt it.
Okay.
Huh. All right. Well, thanks guys both for coming. Be sure to listen to No Topic Required, which is still weekly, more often than this show, unfortunately, but. A good listen, definitely not safe for young ears.
Yeah. This week, here, can I have an extra?
This week,
we're going to talk about near-death experiences, because I had one, and I didn't talk about it at all this episode.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't bring it up on purpose, so.
No, it's fine.
and then Justin, who represents us wonderfully for Pouch TV on Revision 3 once in a while. Is there anything else you'd like to plug for yourself?
If you haven't already, check out Downloaded on the Tech Feed YouTube channel on Revision 3. I've been on it a couple times, and I might be making some more appearances. Cross your fingers. Let's hope.
Right on. I gotta say, though, it really scarred me a little bit seeing you in that Grimlock costume.
Sorry about that.
Anyway. Yep, so you can listen to the Famicom Dojo podcast if you aren't already through our free iTunes storefront. You should totally leave a comment and rate us. Then there's also Twitter, Famicom Dojo, Facebook, Famicom Dojo. You can call us and leave your comments about the Xbox One or anything else that we probably should have talked about that you felt that we should have mentioned, or to just chew us out for saying we'll actually buy an Xbox One. You can call us at 608-492-1923 and try to keep your comments to under 3 minutes. Otherwise, it'll just get cut off, and we will probably play that for comedic effect. And again, I can follow Zach on Twitter as Zach Shipley, or do you have No Topic Required now?
Yeah, No Topic Required is a real Twitter feed now. It no longer supports the Westboro Baptist Church or the Hitler Party or whatever.
Or NAMBLA.
Yeah, NAMBLA. Yeah. That was an unfortunate incident.
Yes. Oh, I guess I need to unfollow that then.
No, it was a thing. We did a crossover episode with the guys with Not Safe for Water Coolers, and we did not have a Twitter account for the show, and they made one, and they made it say horrible things, and then they called us on it as if we were doing it. So it was very clever of them. But
I should have done that here too. Oh well.
It was a good 2 weeks before we actually got control of that account, so I cleaned it out of all the bad stuff, and it basically just retweets Rob Delaney stuff now.
All right. And you can follow Justin at _JS.
That's me.
Right on. And if you want to call him Severson or Severson, I guess he doesn't care.
The world is your oyster.
Right on. So until next time, Famicom Dojo podcast off.
Famicom Dojo.
All right, so NeoGAF games,
Xbox. Games.
Damn it.
Go home, Sean. You're drunk.
I know. I must be. I just had the one beer, too.
We'll fix it in post.